Welcome to the Driving Eureka podcast, where we share ideas and advice for helping you find, filter, and fast track big ideas. Let's go! Hi, I'm Trip Babbitt, advisor to global organizations on the Deming philosophy and host of the Deming Institute podcast.
And I'm Doug Hall, inventor, speaker, teacher, and whiskey maker. I'm also the founder of the Eureka Ranch and author of the Driving Eureka book.
This is the 30th episode of the Driving Eureka podcast, and we're doing a special series right now. It's going to be a three-part series. The first part we covered off, Doug, about the mission and the boundaries, and we even got into some of the decisions that you need to make about what direction you want to head and making distillery. Are you going to build a facility? Are you going to kind of outsource everything at the beginning and then maybe go to a facility? There's some decisions to be made like that. We talked quite a bit about also some of the state and local and federal challenges associated, in my case, with Indiana. And is there anything I missed on kind of what we covered last time?
No, it was about the foundation. It was about laying a foundation for how we're going to do distillery. And now in this episode, we're going to start to get into the fun stuff. So we've got that foundation, and now we're going to get into what's our storyline. What's the storyline for what we're going to be?
And where do we start?
Well, we call this the yellow card, and this is – we start off with who do we want to be our customers? Now, you know, whether we're customers that we sell to because we sell them through bars and through stores, or we're going to have a tasting room, because even if you – if you bring the whiskey in or it's finished or you do the finishing or whatever you might be doing, gin, vodka, whatever, it's in a local place. It's like, who do you want to have hang out at your tasting room? You know, what are the kind of people do you want? Do you want old people? Do you want young people, purple people, green people, spotted people? You know, what is the vibe of this place? Is it hard rock? Is it country? Is it, you know, what is the spirit, the kind of place that you envision having, you know? And it's really important to think this through, because that then frames a lot of the rest of what becomes our brand and our storyline that we're putting together.
Okay. And so one of the questions that I have, so for instance, I went out last night to dinner at a new place, and it just opened a week before. They have one of the big brands that they're doing and all their mixed drinks. And so I looked at that and I said, boy, that would be an opportunity. I could, you know, get with the owners, they're locally owned, and say, hey, why don't you carry this brand as opposed to the big brand, because it's going to be locally made. So that's, you know, kind of one of the things I have going through mind. Now there you've got a mix of people. And so I don't really say I'm, you know, focusing in on this particular thing. It had all different type of people. Now it was mostly a beer place, I could tell. So I had that going through my head. I've got my friend at the liquor store that I could go to them. So what's wrong with my thinking?
There's nothing wrong with the thinking, you know, and you can put that together. I do say that it's going to be important to have some place. I think to be a craft distiller, you can do it by just having a warehouse that does it, but having a place where you stand behind the bar, mm-hmm. I think it's really important, as much for the feedback loop as anything else. But that can be your bar, or it can be you partner with somebody that has a restaurant and you work in the warehouse right beside it, you know, and it's, you know, you collaborate with them to do it. And that's fine too, because it has a real attraction to people. You find somebody that's in the restaurant business. And so they're in the restaurant business, you're in the booze business, mm-hmm. and you work together, growing traffic and sales and partner and collaborate somehow, which is, by the way, the easiest way to do this is that you just need to work together with people. There's plenty of restaurants that could use more sales. And craft distilleries are very, very popular, just like breweries.
Okay. So, yeah, I guess in my mind, you know, as you're asking this question, it's kind of, I've heard you talk about you really need to have a tasting room. You know, I could have that. That would probably be as far as I go. I don't think I'd have a restaurant. I like the idea of leveraging other restaurants that are already in existence and kind of going in there and saying, yeah, you're using the big brand. How about a craft that's locally made?
Yeah, it's the story I did the other day at a place. I went to this farm to table restaurant and I said, you got any craft whiskey? And he pointed to the shelf. I said, no, that's made by the Japanese conglomerate Suntory. That's made by Diageo from UK. And he held up this other old brand. I go, no, he's been dead for 50 years. No, that's all. The family sold out. They've sold out. Mm. I said, these are like Budweiser here, guy. Mm. He looked at me in shock. He said, well, what do you mean by craft? I said, you mean like locally owned, you know, small people doing it? He says, no, I guess I don't. And then I thought it. I didn't say it because at this point my wife is hitting me. I said, I felt like saying, because I picked up his craft cocktail list, I felt like saying, so these aren't craft cocktails. These are corporate cocktails that you're making, mm-hmm. you know, because you can't make a craft cocktail without a craft whiskey. Well, you know, come on, you know, cut me some slack. Cut me some slack here.
No, I think that's actually, you know, that makes it a good story because I think people, you know, they've seen now with the beer, you know, I don't know anybody anymore that goes out and buys their light, you know, Miller Lite and their, you know, Budweiser and those types of things. They're all out doing, you know, Weizengut and, you know, different things like right. that. So yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And by the way, related to that, what we're going to do, and we're opening up in Windsor, just outside of London. We just finalized the terms on that. And we're working with a craft brewery, Windsor Eaton. They're the people that make the royal beer. They're the official brewer of the Queen. And so they've got one, a royal Windsor baby coming for the new baby that's coming. And they did the wedding and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But special beers. But one of the things we're doing with them is we're doing for the craft breweries, we're going to focus on breweries to start. And we're working with the breweries and using some of the small ice stills where we can take their heavy beer, which is a grain, and distill it so that we take it from 8% to 40% alcohol and then add that into a whiskey and make for them a custom whiskey that has some of their beer in it.
Mm. Interesting.
Which is a very cool concept. And so that would be something that we could work with you in Indiana, and you and your son and daughter or whatever could literally, you know, we could work an arrangement where you basically – tell breweries, hey, you sell craft beer. You want to sell your own craft whiskey? And we have to work through the state, but like in Ohio, we can figure it out so that we can sell it directly to that distillery, just a beer for them, put their name on it.
Okay.
Which they sell in the tasting room.
So you're talking... That's
a cool business
model. Oh, yeah. No, I like that. Especially like that. And again, I'm going to have to do my homework on the laws. But... Windsor Eaton, is that actually in Windsor by the Windsor Castle?
You can see the castle from their door.
Really? Okay. Yeah. All right. I've been there multiple times. Good. Okay. Yeah, I like that that idea. We'll have to flesh that out.
Okay. So you got to figure out who you want to hang out with.
Okay.
And then you're going to work on brand name and storyline. And I'm big on getting your trademark at the start. Or getting some trademarks. It's really hard to get trademarks in the beer and spirits industry because there's so many craft people. But part of what you're going to own is that trademark. And so I would start to look for what's going to be that name that you're going to have. And because that story, that name then creates a story. And it's almost like it's a bizarre trip in that if you know what your idea is, the name's obvious. But you'll have a hard time coming up with a name because you won't know kind of what you want to be. And really, it's the storyline. What's going to be your storyline of this thing? A couple of thoughts that I have, just some blurbs, mm-hmm. and let's talk about what you've been kind of thinking, even or just feeling.
Okay.
You know, one is it can be historical. You can take a name there. There's something called Voodoo Brands. If you go on the internet and you look up pre-prohibition, there were way more brands than there are today because they were hyper local. Everybody had their own brand. And so we've done this with Old Dexter, Kentucky Club. we've taken old brands that were, years ago, the trademarks have been abandoned. We refiled the trademarks. We now own the trademarks because they're all long abandoned. And it gives us kind of an instant pedigree in history.
Huh.
And so that's a way to do it.
Okay.
Sometimes you can do it with a cause. You know, our Noble Oak product that we partnered with Edrington on. Mm-hmm. You know, for every bottle bought, they plant a tree. And so that's part of the element of this. You could turn around and take your whiskey. And if you're working with us, you could turn around and take local wood. So we've got a guy in Windsor up in Canada who's coming to us, and he's talking to us about he wants to use local wood from his area. He wants to have in his whiskey. So he's got a story of the local oak. Okay. In Winnipeg is where he is. And he wants Winnipeg oak in it. That's cool. I can do that for him. That's not a problem. You know, so you start to think about, you know, what's the name? And I would think not just, okay, this is how we're going to start, but I would imagine yourself 10 years into the future, what might the line look like? You know, is this line going to end up having gin and vodka in it? Is there going to be a, you know, you talked about the family. Is it going to be a white spirits line and a dark spirits line? Are they going to be like two things? Are they going to be together? Are you going to add rum, brandy, tequila? Or are you going to stay it as a whiskey? I mean, I've chosen whiskey, but that's up to people to decide. And then as you think about that storyline, I would think about how do they play in cocktails. So, for example, we've got this line, Old Dexter's part of our Riverboat series. We changed Keelboat to Old Dexter, which was Edmund Dexter was a big whiskey maker pre-Prohibition in Cincinnati. He had moved from London to Cincinnati. The future King of England stayed with him. Lots of storyline, you know, lots of story. Charles Dickens stayed with him. And so this, and now that we're opening at Windsor Eaton, you know, we've got this English story. And as the English thing came, that gives me a storyline to it. And we looked up some photos, and we found a photo of a painting in the Smithsonian, which is in the public domain now. And I had a guy redraw it. And as it turned out, there's a riverboat in the photo from 1855 or the drawing that has a riverboat called the Embassy in it. And so I filed a trademark on Embassy. And so Old Dexter is our brand, and Embassy is our trademark cocktail. We've done it on the show here. And so Embassy is going to be my feature cocktail for Old Dexter. And so you can see I'm starting to play out. See, I'm putting the thing together. Now, my Riverboat series, I've got a series. I've got an easy drinking, which is Dexter, which I'm going to sell in 1 liter bottles because it's using for cocktails. And then in 750 ml bottles, I've got Paddle Wheel, which is my hearty in the 200-year wood bourbon. I've got Deckhand, which is my 5-wood rye. And I've got Tall Stacks, like the Tall Stacks of the Riverboats, there for my smoked whiskey. So I've developed a Riverboat series that has 4 products in it, and then there's cocktails that play with that. I've got Smoke Storm as my tall stack. You see where I'm going?
Yeah.
So I've got my set of products. I have the purpose for them. I know what they are and the whole thing. Now, we're further along, and we're making a lot of products, so we can do 4. You might turn around and just do Old Dexter as an example to start, but you've roughed out, and it may be firm and it may be light. Here's what my set's going to look like. And you notice what's not in my set is I could have just as easily done a whiskey, a rum, a brandy, you know, or a rye and a bourbon, you know, just as a, you know, again, it's what fits your storyline. And in my case, it's pre-Prohibition Cincinnati is what we're celebrating, where Cincinnati was kind of the heart of whiskey.
So, okay, let's back up a little bit here. As you were talking, there's things that I've obviously thought about, but so when you're talking trademark, I'm almost thinking that there's kind of the broader name. So for instance, you know,
the company name.
Yeah. You know, and that would have something to do with the family, with my family is where my brain's going. And then you would have your individual things like you're talking about with Deckhand. And So my question is am I trademarking the family name part, or am I doing trademarks on each of the labels that I have to come up with of the different types of whiskey or vodka or gin?
The answer is yes and yes. in my mind, sometimes people just put their company name, they trademark that, and then that's the name, and then they go, this is our gin, this is our vodka, and doing it. I am a big believer, so to increase the value of what you own is to create that as the parent name. So if you use food, you know how products say Nabisco, mm-hmm. and then it's, you know, Ultralights or, you know, Ziggity's or whatever. But there's a Nabisco brand that's a company name and then a brand name. I like to have that because I also have increased the valuation of my company because now I've got brands as opposed to one brand. You know, when you put your company name on it and you just have flavor names, you really are one brand. And there's a benefit to that. Some people like to do it that way, and many craft do it that way. And I'm good with it. If that floats your boat, that's great. Myself personally, I like to have a company name. Our company name is Brain Brew, mm-hmm. and then our products have different names. And then our cocktails have a name. So we have three levels of names.
Okay.
Some people just have a company name and a generic descriptor, bourbon, you know, or rye, and it's one name. I like to have the set. It gives me more value. It gives me, you know, I can generate news. I can create fans of those. With my Riverboat series, I've got four T-shirts mm-hmm. that they can buy. They can be a fan of this one versus this one. Now you got to recognize, if I was distilling from grain, I can't do this because I can't do these number permutations. Because of the way I work with our compression finishing process, I can have as many products as I want. That's one of the benefits of working with Brain Brew. If we're working with you, you know, you want another product, it's no problem.
Some things are going through my head. So I have already have I have a company that I have incorporated 25 years ago.
Yep.
Should I leverage that, or do I need a whole new one for this venture? Because
Doesn't matter because you can file a DBA. So we're Brain Brew Ventures 3.0 is our legal corporate name.
Okay.
But we filed a DBA, doing business as Brain Brew Custom Whiskey.
Okay.
And so the registered corporate name doesn't have to be the name that you trade under.
Okay. All right. So I don't have to incorporate a new company. I can just do a DBA.
Yep.
Call it whatever the family name, and then but you're kind of, what I'm hearing is that the trademark associated with the with the individual product. So in other words,
the company name and the family name. You got to make sure that you can get your family name.
Okay. So the incorporated name or the family. Okay.
The doing business as.
Okay. The DBA
trademark name. That's going to be on the package.
Okay. All right. So I've got to look that up. And do we have a process for doing that? I've not done that before.
There are apps that you can get. You have to look in the beer, wine, and spirits classes. You have to look up the numbers of those. And there's ways to do those online. You can search at the TTB site, but there's also apps for your phone that you can buy for searching them. The key is to look inside those things, but at the end of the day, you're going to need an attorney to look at it.
Okay.
And in your case, Trip, we're friends. Do the initial search to see if you find it, and then let me know. And, you know, I've got David Lafkis, who's a patent and trademark attorney on here, so I'll just do that for you as a favor.
Okay. I appreciate that. What is the – okay. So I need to do the DBA name, and do I need to come up with a trademark then for one of the initial labels? I feel like I'm way too early.
No. Yes. No. Do it at the start.
Do it at the start.
Yeah, because the big mistake people make is they spend a whole lot of time with a kind of a working name. Then they can't get it, and no name is ever as good as that one.
Okay.
I get the names at the start. And because you're going to find that you're going to go through 50 names to find one you can own.
Okay.
And if you don't own it, it's worthless.
I got you. Okay.
Remember we talked about what you own?
Yes.
This name is a key thing that you're going to own.
Okay.
Now, in my case, I started out with Paddle Wheel, and then I loved that, and then I could get Tall Stacks, and then that became – we didn't start with this Cincinnati, 80% of the whiskey came from Cincinnati pre-Prohibition. This whole storyline that we're talking about, that evolved over time, and it was not where I started, but then it just got cool, and then my buddy Toby did packaging for me, because the next thing you're going to do is you're going to get a package done. And your first package will be one where you cut and paste on the internet and you just make up something. Then you get an artist friend to sketch something for you. But you want to get to a name and package as soon as you possibly can, because now you've taken your idea and you've made it real. Remember we talked about that?
Okay. So now we're into concept prototype type of mindset.
Right. That's right. Okay. You're gonna get it.
So even if I change it later, like you did with Keelboat, the old Dexter, I at least am starting with something that's a conceptual prototype.
Fits your foundation that we talked about last week.
Okay.
Fits your foundation. So I own like 50 trademarks for whiskeys and spirits, and they're at different stages.
Okay.
Because I started one, and then I got into another direction, and so you'll get a system for doing this, and then you'll get to your thing. And it starts to become real. And as it becomes real, because as we get into next week, starting to deal with investors, they're going to want to see it, feel it, touch it.
Mm.
And it can be ugly, but they just, you know, it can't be give me money and I'll go figure it out. You know, you've got to get it a little bit further. And so you need that concept prototype of what it is. And then what I would do is write the copy for the back of the package. The back of the bottle.
Okay.
So unlike beers that don't have any space, whiskeys are about stories. And so what's the story of, you know, in our story on the back of the riverboats, you know, this celebrates when Cincinnati was the birthplace of American whiskey, blah, 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 you know, and the great time of the riverboats.
Yeah.
And see, I've got a natural story that is hyper local because I really believe in hyper local. Because that really sets you out because you can't compete against the people with billions of dollars, but they can't compete against your hyper local story.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to have to do a little digging on that. I'm not sure. I haven't really thought about that part, I guess, in depth of trying to get the local story. I know the importance of narrative associated with the, you know, doing a blue card that we talked about in the last episode. And I actually did a podcast one of my new podcasts, which is on Mind Your Noodles, about having a storyteller and the importance from a brain standpoint of how story actually helps people understand and remember your product is such a big deal. And I don't have a story at this point, and I'm going to have to, I guess, do some digging if I'm going to be more what you would call the local legend, which is, I think, more the idea of what I'm trying to be, you know.
That's right. That's
area.
Yellow cards are stories.
Mm.
They're just a story. Who's the customer? Problem, promise, proof. And it's just that, you know, and it's telling the story of what makes us sing. So let me give you another example. So with Jarrett and I, we're doing a partnership this summer for fun and to learn a bunch. And so we're doing a maritime whiskey collaboration. The Maritimes of Canada, okay, are out there. And what we've decided to do is to create we're going to create two, and we didn't think to do this. It's the Maritime Whiskey Collaboration, and it combines the farm-to-glass richness of Nova Scotia whiskey maker Jarrett Stewart of Caldera with the luxury smoothness of Cincinnati whiskey maker Doug Hall of Brain Brew Custom Whiskey, okay? And so that's what brings us together. And then we have two products. One is the Nellie J. Banks, which was a boat, which was the last great maritime bootlegger that was arrested off Nova Scotia. It's a great story. They were there 2 or 3 miles out that they're supposed to be. They changed the laws to 12 miles. And the next morning when the law changed, the Mounties came and arrested him. And he's like, dude, I'm okay. I'm outside. No. It used to be basically a floating bar out there. The fishermen would go out to have a drink on boat during Prohibition. They tow the boat in to Charlottetown. They hold a trial. 8-4, the captain's acquitted. The federal government decides to give up because they say they can't get 12 Prince Islanders who will convict a bootlegger because everybody loves the Nellie Banks. And it, for me, it's cool because the Nellie Banks used to be right offshore where my house is in Prince Edward Island. But this is a Nova Scotia, it's a legend, okay? Mm-hmm. And then so that's going to be our easy drinking product, and it's a Canadian whiskey. So we're going to use U.S. and Canadian. We put them together, and it becomes a Canadian whiskey, okay? So simple story,
yeah.
Right? And then we're doing a luxury product, which is going to be the Marco Polo, which was the fastest ship in the world in 1852. It set a record traveling from England to Australia in 68 days. And it was built in St. John, New Brunswick, which is where my great-grandfather was from, and it sank off Cavendish Beach, Prince Edward Island, about 2 miles from my house, and I saw it as a kid when it was down there, and it's a very famous ship. And these are our two products. We've got a Canadian whiskey and we've got a bourbon whiskey. And, you know, and one's a sipping product and one's a cocktail product. But you can see how this is. And then after we did them, we just did them. I said, I guess I'm into boats. But, you know, you see what I mean? And
yeah.
So now I've got a story. I've got richness. I've got cool factor. I got great T-shirts. I got legend. I've got this renegade. And in our, unlike Cincinnati, rum is huge up there. The Nellie Banks carried whiskey, rum, vodka, gin. But rum was over half of what would be in its hold that they would smuggle in. And so with success this year, next year we'll do rum, you know, and we'll have a nice little business that is, it's got a cool factor. It could go across Canada, you know, because maritime, there's literally a song, the Nellie Banks. I mean, there are songs that they sing. And, okay. So let me just give you some thoughts. Just some stimulus,
okay,
for what this storyline is, because I'm laying this out and I'm realizing that maybe you need a little bit more just to help and people listening, because it's like, where do I start? I don't have a boat, you know. Like, you don't need a boat. You need to think something that's kind of cool, that's got some story to it. You know, what are local legends? Read the history. Read the history. I mean, I didn't start by knowing all the history of Cincinnati with distilling, that distilling was twice the size of beer. I learned that as I got into it. So look up the history of your region, your area. Look up famous people from the area. Look up legends, ghost stories. I mean, it can be anything that resonates, or it could be a native flower, bird, animal. It can be the history of the early pioneers that came in and what they did, or something that people are proud of. I mean, that's in the day, what you want is something that people are proud of, because they're going to wear it literally. They're going to wear it with their shirt, you know. Putting the Nellie Banks, last great bootlegger, that's kind of cool to wear, you know. The paddle wheel and deck hand, you know, when Cincinnati, you know, that's a piece of pride for the local space. You know, what is that thing that creates that is authentic, but that creates a bit of an emotion to it, you know? And I'm not going to overplay the emotional thing, but there is emotion that comes from that. When you plant a tree for Noble Oak, you feel good about it. By the way, Noble Oak's in Indiana now, by the way.
Oh, yay. Yeah, I'll have to look at
it. Indiana, and it's actually one of the hot markets right now.
Cool.
It took off much faster than anybody expected. So I just learned that.
I told you we're thirsty for, you know, good product.
Yeah, get it there. We're getting there. We're making it.
So, Doug, as other stimulus, you know, I know you've gotten into the whole wood thing. I could tell you, you know, the two symbols for Indiana are the tulip tree and the tulip and the peony. Those are the two. Something about peony doesn't resonate with me. But anyway, should I be looking for wood? Would that be something, you know, around here?
It could be if there was, you know, if there's an old estate, if there's a type of wood that's famous. It's like, I've got a guy who I'm going to meet in just a little bit. He's created Big Ash Brewery. The ash trees were big here. Bugs came through or something, disease, and killed them all. When the trees went down, he saved a bunch of them. And in his brewery, he's making a whole bunch of the furniture from ash wood. And we're going to make him a Big Ash whiskey with ash in it.
Cool.
It is what it is. Now you say it doesn't float my boat, but like mine. Yeah. But, you know.
Right. Well, yeah. But
whatever excites him is excites him.
Okay.
And it's got a genuine link to the story. So, you know, just, I mean, I'm, this is going to be terrible, especially coming from me, an engineer. You got to feel it, you know, you got to feel it, like, that's cool. You know, the internet's a wonderful place. The history museum, the local history museum, even, I know you're outside, but, you know, go to Indianapolis. Where's the local historical society?
Mm-hmm.
you'd be amazed at the stuff. I mean, as I got into this Nellie Banks, and then the beautiful thing about the internet is I find a book written about the Nellie Banks by a couple. You know, it's probably a, you know, not a big book, but, you know, fascinating to read the history of it. And I'm, you know, all, you know, and so it's fun. Okay. It's a lot of fun.
Okay.
But you see, there's a whole story yeah. there. It's a richness. There's a tapestry. That's what you've got to get next. After you've got your foundation, you need your storyline. Okay. And then you need to make it real with a concept prototype, which is the label, front and back, mm-hmm. badly. I don't care. Badly. Just make it. And then make a functional prototype. And you can – the first way I do this is mixing. Buy a bunch of vodkas, gins, whatever you're making, and just do mixology to get – it's going to be kind of like this. Okay, that's a way to do it. The other way for you to do it is just come on over here to Cincinnati mm-hmm. and we'll you show me the package of what it is. And then I'll get Philip, who's our, you know, incredible taste whiskey maker, and Joe, who's just like ridiculously good. And these expert whiskey makers and myself, who does the best I can. And the three of us will sit with you and we'll start crafting, you know, the Hoosier whiskey, you know, celebration or what it is, and start to make some. And then the last two parts of this is go out and we'll start running a concept and product test in Indianapolis or wherever.
Okay.
And start to see what people think of it.
Okay.
And then do some rough math on it just to make sure that the math works.
But just to be, really, just for clarity though, I've got to get all these state and federal and all that stuff before you even get to that point.
No. You can do that concurrently. No, you just need to understand the rules from the beginning. You need to know the rules, but you probably aren't starting that work yet until you've got this rough thing.
Okay.
You got to have it. You got why you were doing it, and now you've got blue card first, yellow card next. And the yellow card has some very rough math so that we just know. So if you pick you know, for instance, if you wanted Japanese wood because the Japanese were big in Indiana and blah, 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 heritage wise or something, or, you know, people came from Mongolia there and we find out that the cost to get wood from Mongolia here is going to add $4 a bottle, then we're not going to do that. That's right, I'm just, it's a feasibility math is all we're talking about.
The only thing close I got to a boat, Doug, is one time I remember in history class back in like third grade that there was a paddle wheel that tried to navigate the White River that runs through Indianapolis, and there's not a lot of water. It dried out, and the paddle wheel boat got stuck there for like 3 years before they were able to get it out. That's the closest I'm going to come to a boat.
You don't need boats. But
maybe it's the stuck paddle wheel.
My great grandfather was a great sailmaker, and I am I'm a boat person, so I've just subconsciously created boat whiskeys.
Okay.
But that's me. You got to be you.
All right. So we've gone through this. We've got the trademarks. We've got a functional prototype that we'd be working on, trying to come up with something, doing trials and things of that sort. And is there anything more we need to do on that, or what's the next step?
Well, I mean, that's what I said. We're going to do some testing. We're going to probably come up with three versions of the label. You might have two or three different name options. We'll come up with two or three prototypes. The beautiful thing with us is we can just quickly make your prototypes, and we can, you know, sell you a bottle as one of our limited edition things so that you could even do a concept and taste test with it, or we can run it for you. Although we'd want to run it in the market so to see if people react to it. We've got some data that says, this thing hits the success standards. We've got a good chance with the concept. We got a good chance with the product. And we do some rough math, and you're done this phase. You're done this phase. You now have an it.
Okay.
You have an it. You've got an it, and maybe a couple of its, depending upon, you know, how you've decided to do it. Now you're ready to start the process, which is what we'll deal with next week, which is the whole investment package. But you've defined why you're doing it and what you're doing. And we really, you know, this is really, really important thinking. Even though they're going to still change, that's the foundation of which companies are built on.
Whether you are an entrepreneur, aspiring entrepreneur, or part of an organization, the Eureka Ranch can teach you to start up, innovate, and grow your business. The yellow card discussed in this episode is available to download at go.drivingeureka.com/yellow card, or click the link in the show notes. We'll send you what you need to start a company, build a product or service, or grow your company. Eureka Ranch will create a path for you to follow.